Staying in touch with friends and family is extremely important to those living in prison, but maintaining these relationships can be a struggle. Christy is one person living on the outside who's finding it hard to keep in touch. Her brother has been in prison for more than 2 years. Christy joins us on the phone from her home in Langley to tell us more about her experiences trying to keep connected to her brother while he is in prison. Thanks for joining us, Christy.
Thanks for having me.
So, your brother's in Agassiz. How often are you able to visit him these days?
Well, I actually haven't seen him in person for just about a year now.
Oh, a year. That's a long time. How come it's been so long?
Well, there's a few reasons that contribute to it. Probably the biggest one is the distance. It's quite a ways. So you have to commit to a few, you know, a good 2 hours travel time, and then the visits are kind of short. And then the other problem is when you get in for the visit, it can be a bit of a challenge sometimes to get into the facility itself.
What do you mean?
Well, some of the security measures they have in place seem designed to prevent or limit or discourage family and friends from visiting.
What kind of measures are those?
Well, they have an ion scanner, which they swab your skin or your clothing or, you know, maybe the bottom of your shoe or your pants. And this is supposed to test for drug residue. And then, I mean, they have the other, the dogs, which I think are pretty common throughout facilities.
And so you've had some negative experiences with this ion scanner. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think pretty much anybody who's ever been in inside to visit probably has had at least one negative experience, if not more. There's a lot of false positives, so if it's considered a hit, and that would indicate that you have been in contact with a drug of some sort, whether it's legal or prescription or illegal, street drugs. And, you know, if they're doing it on your shoe or your pants, there's, you know, many ways of cross-contact. And once they've decided that you've been in contact, then you are often labeled a security threat and treated as such, and your visits can be terminated or screened or limited, or just they can be extra aggressive in making you feel uncomfortable and unwelcome.
So this ion scan often will find, you know, any kind of trace on you. It's a very sensitive machine, right?
Well, it is really sensitive, and the areas that they tend to test at some of the facilities would be like the outside of your clothing or your shoes. So these are the kind of the areas of your body that would come in contact with other surfaces, you know, rubbing against a door handle or just, you know, on a bus or a person, or lots of different ways that they can falsely indicate.
So it sounds like right at the gate there's a generally culture of suspicion. As a visitor, is that the feeling you get when you go in there?
Definitely.
And then when you experience this false positive, you say then you're limited in your visits. Tell us a little bit more about what happens, because this happened to you, right? You got a false positive?
Yes. Well, it depends on the facility. I've talked to a lot of people who've been through sort of similar experiences in different facilities. In my personal situation, because I had a long record of visiting without any kind of security threats or any kind of issues, after about an hour, they decided to let me have a reduced visit, and it was screened, so it was behind glass. And one thing that I want to point out is that, I mean, I say this, and I'm sure a lot of people say this to the guard when this occurs, is, you know, I'll submit to a strip search, please, you know, do an actual search to see if there's actually some sort of contraband on my person. They don't typically do that, and so you're in a screened visit and you're behind glass. So if you're with your family, only one person can talk at a time in most of the facilities. It's a long process to get through once they decide to even let you have a visit. Sometimes they'll turn people away, and they can suspend your visits for a month, 6 months, indefinitely. And then it goes to a review board, at which point I would assume at that point I didn't have to deal with it. But then they would, I guess, decide whether they really feel you're a security threat or if they have some other motivation to prevent that inmate from receiving visitors.
It all sounds a little bit arbitrary and bureaucratic.
Yeah, I think so.
So when you go in, you have this ion scan, and then you have to kind of deal with that whole issue. What else at that point makes it difficult or unwelcoming for you to feel like it's a good place to visit with your brother?
Well, I mean, it's just the sort of general attitude, I think, of the staff. And it's not all the staff, and it's probably not the same at all the institutions, but my experiences has been that a lot, you know, they just seem to look at you suspiciously, they speak down to you, and they're very, it's almost like guilt by association. If you were interested in visiting someone who's incarcerated, then by default, you must therefore be involved in some sort of illegal activity, which is, I don't, it's not the case for me, and I think for a majority of people who visit, that's not the case at all.
And your brother was in Mountain, which is a medium security prison that had a pretty bad riot and fallout from that about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. What was the environment like that in there for you as a visitor?
Well, I went after that had occurred, so I'm not sure how much it changed, but from what I understand, as a result of that incident, or perhaps as a cause to that incident, they had set in place a policy where if you were in a visit with an inmate and either the visitor or the inmate had to leave to use the washroom, your visit was terminated.
Why would that be?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I would assume that they're suspicious that if you're using the washroom, you are going to do something to bring in drugs from the washroom. I can't justify it in my mind. I can't find any logical reason for that.
So in the past while, the past year, you say you visited your brother only once, but it wasn't like that when he first went into prison. Tell us a little bit more about your experience when he was first incarcerated.
Well, like I say, every institution is different and their policies are different. One of the places where we first had any kind of open contact visit, which is where you sit across from the table and you're able to hug your family or, you can have play games and it's more comfortable. The staff, I mean, they're the same process. They've got the metal detectors, the ion scanner, the dog. They do as much as they can, but they're very welcoming and they seem to really encourage family to maintain contact with their loved ones. And I know when my brother was there, he seemed to be doing a lot better. And I like to think it's because we were able to visit. And while the guards are there and the staff is there, you know, watching over everything, they treat the visitors and the family respectfully. You have to wait to be escorted out to the washroom, but you're allowed to come back in. It's a more relaxed environment. I don't think it's any less secure, but there's not that air of automatic suspicion.
And so you're visiting him a lot less often these days, mm-hmm. and you mentioned the distance. What other kinds of things have made it difficult to keep up with your visits?
Well, I guess the big one with where he is now is the fear that I'm going to go out there. And I don't really mind making the sacrifice of the time and the distance to see him. It's just the idea of going out there and then being turned away. It's stressful for him. I get upset. So then he has to see me upset because I'm anxious and I'm feeling, you almost get a guilty conscience even though you know you're not doing anything wrong. It's just really hard to be in that environment and to have an enjoyable visit with your family.
And so what's like, if how often do they allow visits and how long are the visits?
Well, the last place that he was at, the visits, I believe they have one-hour visits Monday through Friday, and then there's a two-hour visit on Saturday and a one-hour visit on Sunday. So you generally have to phone either, there's usually like a one-hour block every day of the week, maybe twice a day for an hour where you can call in to book your visits, and you can't do them any more in advance, usually than about a week. And they're a pretty short visit, I think, for the most part. So to go all the way out there and to feel that kind of stress and possibly not even get in for a visit, and just for an hour. It's really...
It takes quite a while to process people through the visits.
It does.
So it's not just that hour, it's the travel time and the processing time too as well.
Yeah, you stand in line, everyone has to empty out into lockers, everybody lines up for the scan, and then you are processed through, and then you go through the dog, and then you're let out, and then they have to wait for the inmates to be brought out, and it's quite a process.
Hmm. And what about some of the other ways to stay in touch with your brother? How have those been going, like telephone and letter writing?
Well, they are able to phone. Most of the time it's collect, which is extremely expensive because, for me personally and probably a lot of other people, it's not a local collect call. So it adds up quite quickly. The inmates at some facilities are able to work and pay for their own phone cards, but unfortunately there's more inmates than job opportunities.
So if your brother's calling you collect, how much a minute, say, would that be?
Well, it depends on the time of the day, but most of the phone calls, it could be about $20 for 45 minutes to an hour.
Wow, so a couple calls a week, that could really add up over a month.
It does, yeah.
Hundreds of dollars.
Yes.
Is there not a way for them to get a calling card or something like that on the inside?
No, unfortunately there's not. I don't know if there's a profit that they would miss out on if that was the case, but they're not allowed to receive them in the mail. Like, you can't go to the corner store and buy a calling card for, you know, 5 cents a minute and send it in to them. They have to, there's just one option.
So it's a challenge also to stay in touch over the phone then.
Well, it is, and it feels like another barrier that they're putting up to minimize contact and support from the outside.
Hmm. And what about letter writing? You and your brother into writing letters to each other?
Well, we do, and it's very helpful, but I know that a lot of the people that he knows, and, you know, I'm sure lots of his people, maybe they're not as literate as others, or maybe they just, you know, they're not very, very into writing. And I know that for him, he probably didn't do a lot of correspondence any time beforehand, and he's done a lot since. But for a lot of people, I don't think they have that opportunity.
So, in the whole picture, it's kind of hard to stay in touch with your brother, and it seems like it's been harder over time. How is your brother doing on the inside at the moment?
Well, I think he's doing good. I think he's really disappointed, as I am as well, to find out that, you know, the whole time in pretrial and waiting for reception, you hear that, you know, once you get to your mother institution, you're going to be able to take these programs, and there's going to be opportunities for education. And then they get to the institution and find out, for the most part, that's really not the case at all. So they spend a lot of time just sort of socializing with one another instead of working towards the goal of getting out with some sort of skills.
So your brother sort of started at the beginning with lots of visits with you and a lot of high hopes for getting involved with programs?
Mm-hmm.
And now, what sort of outlook has he got?
Well, he's on his home stretch, basically. He's just got under a year left, and he's basically, I think, come to the conclusion that he's probably not going to get any programs before his release. So I think that's really discouraging, because there isn't really much more in the community to provide that kind of support that he was hoping for. And I don't know exactly how he feels about it, but I know that I'm not as encouraged as I was in the beginning.
So you've become a little more cynical.
Yeah, and it's worrisome.
What worries you?
Well, what's he going to do? I mean, while he's there, he doesn't have to worry about working and paying rent and buying groceries. So I would think, had hoped that his time would be spent, you know, working on himself. But then he'll come home and he's going to have to start paying bills and get back into to working and stuff like that, and he won't have, you know, he'll sort of be in the same boat he was in when he started this journey.
So he's coming out in about a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a bit worried about that transition.
Yeah.
How do you think that's been impacted, or What's the relationship, do you think, between how he's doing and how you know, some of your worries about him coming out and the amount and ability that you've had to be able to interact with him, visit him, and communicate with him?
Well, I think that he would probably, I think him, and I mean not just him, but a lot of other people would do a lot better if they had that opportunity to have family and friends be there. I mean, it breaks my heart to tell him I can't talk to you. The phone bill is too high this month. You can't call me for, you know, a couple more weeks. And I'm sure that doesn't make him feel very good either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what other factors make it difficult for you to visit your brother? Are there other things that have come up?
Well, I mean, you know, I work, I have a job and a life and a family, and I have responsibilities, and I try to keep him in it. But I think the biggest one would be the distance, and then the reception that I get when I get to the institution. And just the visits can be stressful.
And what would make it easier for you to keep in touch with your brother?
I think that for me personally, just being more confident in being able to get in for a visit and being treated a little less suspiciously when I get there would make me feel a lot more comfortable and would make the visits a lot more comfortable.
And there's a lot of reports and studies that talk about the importance of maintaining those connections between the family and friends on the outside and people doing time. What do you have to say to those running the prison system about your experience?
Well, it's interesting because I believe that those are mentioned on Corrections Canada's website. They refer to that fact. But I would just say that if they truly believed, which I do believe that family is important, that they really need to do more to encourage and enable family members to be able to be there for them. I mean, I understand that they have to have security measures in place. I don't want my loved one to go in to be incarcerated and to come out with, you know, any of the problems that can come from drugs and other issues. But it's counterproductive. I think their measures are a false sense of security, and they just prevent families from feeling comfortable coming in.
And have you spoken to other family members or people who've tried to stay in touch, and have you tried to connect with them around these issues? Or?
Well, I have in certain cases. I mean, when I was visiting more often, I did talk to a lot of the people that were visiting their families as well. There's a few online resources, but they're more sort of across North America. But there's really not a lot locally for families to feel supported. So I think a lot of us kind of feel like we're the only person going through this, so we don't really feel like we have a voice to stand up and say, you know, this isn't fair and this isn't right and it's not benefiting anybody. I mean, it's just my brother, but there's people, you know, whose parents are incarcerated and they're facing the same challenges as I am to get in for a visit.
So there's a lot of commonalities in your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, because I think, like what you're saying, that feeling of isolation or it's only happening to you, hopefully other people will hear that and know that, you know, if that's happening to them, it's happening to more than one person. So thanks very much for coming on and talking about your experiences.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Christy. She works hard to maintain her relationship with her brother. Her brother is currently living behind bars in the Fraser Valley and is set to be out of prison in about a year. Christy lives in Langley.